Jones.
Oh, hi.
Nice to meet you.
Somebody pour this for me?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's fresh.
Ready?
Sure.
Do you need some water?
No, I got some.
Okay. Good afternoon. My name is Kathy Jones. I'm regional liaison for the Secretary of State's office. Welcome to the post-election audits and recounts work group session. First, I'd like to introduce our panel. We have Larry Norden, Senior Counsel, Brennan Center for Justice at NYU School of Law. Next, we have Katherine Thompson, Director of Field Services, Ohio Secretary of State's office. Pam Smith, President, Verified Voting, and Ron Olson, Center for Election Excellence and Citizens Alliance for Secure Elections. Today's topics, we have three questions. The first is experience with audits in 2008. After the 2008 presidential election, all Ohio counties implemented the first post-election audit in the secretary's history, or in the state's history, I'm sorry. As a result, several counties amended official results and some race outcomes were affected. What went well and what could be improved? And we'll start with Larry. Start with Mr. Olson.
Thanks, Larry. Hi, everybody. Can you hear me back there?
Yeah, I think that would help.
I think she's going to get it.
First of all, thanks for coming and showing an interest in audits. A little bit on my background before I get into what I think went well. My day job for the last 20 or so years has been as a software system and project manager, quality assurance manager. And the reason I mention that is that my responsibilities have been very similar in some ways to Board of Elections, where I was responsible for hardware, software, testing, providing training and manuals for the people who are going to run the systems, and usable information for the users of the system, you know, which in your case are the voters. So I have, while I've gotten involved in sort of an advocacy role as an interest in elections, being responsible for real systems, computer systems in the real world, has given me appreciation for, you can't just provide theory, you've got to merge it with the reality of getting the job done. To move on to audits, I did work with a number of folks to do a small audit observation program. We had observers, volunteer observers, in about 8 or 9 counties. We wanted to do more, but the audit directive, of course, came out kind of late, 10 days after the election on November 14th. I'm sure that created a lot of challenges for boards of elections. And similarly, as observers, we had a lot of challenges just getting people to understand, you know, to be getting the word out so there were people interested, and also figuring out how the audits were supposed to work so we could tell them what to look for. But looking at those results, I'll go through a couple things, first of all, that we think went well. First of all, that audits were done, period, we think was a big plus. Second, that observers were included in the process. Third, that all types of ballots, provisional, election day, early votes, absentee, remakes, all those different kind of ballots were included. that the hand count was compared against the official totals. I think it was back in March, if I'm not mistaken. In the first audit, a certain number of ballots were taken and then run through the scanner and hand counted. So you were counting, you know, one precinct's worth of ballots, hand count, and through the machine, being rerun through the machine. But you weren't going back to the official count to see if there was something wrong with a count that went to the Secretary of State and became the official one. And that was corrected for November, so that was a big help. The votes were hand counted, except I believe in a few cases where with DREs, the paper audit trail was compromised or missing, and then ballot images were used. And the last thing, of course, was that the audit results were used to correct the official counts. And these are some of the important parts of key audit principles that there's a document that I think Pam put on some of the tables here that was put together by some national folks on best principles and practices for audits. And these are some of the key elements of that. So I'd encourage you to take a look at that now or later. We certainly have links to it on the internet as well. But those were some of the key things I think that were done well. So I'll stop there. And
Pam?
Hi, everyone. Thanks for coming, and thanks for including me. Someone asked me what my connection to Ohio is. And people often ask me how I got interested in elections in the first place, and I usually tell them, well, I'm from Chicago. And that's pretty much all they need to know. but right now I'm from San Diego, and so I'm taking up some sun worshiper space out there, and I'm really a Buckeye wannabe, so thanks for letting me be here. Ron mentioned exactly one of the things I was going to say. What went well? You did audits. There are some 3/4 of the states that have moved to auditable systems, voting systems nationwide so far, and the rest kind of seem to be looking to follow, but only about 1/4 of the states, fewer than 1/4 of the states did audits after the November election. And while that number has increased pretty dramatically over the past probably 3 to 4 years and shows signs of continuing to increase with new states passing audit provisions, it's still nowhere near enough. And it's a great thing that Ohio has stepped up and done this and that all the counties have done what seems to be a pretty darn good job of doing this. And I think that that the transparency by having observers there is also a very good thing. The principles document I'll just mention briefly, I was one of the editors on that, and that we also included folks from the American Statistical Association. We included some election officials to review it. We had a political scientist as part of the panel of editors, and a lot of thought went into that and a lot of input from folks like you, and there is a copy available at the electionaudits.org website, which is, I think, a useful resource for you. And electionaudits.org/principles is where you can find the document. I brought some copies. I have probably one more here if somebody wants one and didn't get one, but you can also download it from there. In terms of other states, what other states are doing and what Ohio is doing and how they compare, I think the key thing to know is that audits come in all shapes and sizes. And when we're talking about audits in this particular context, we're talking about the vote tabulation audit component, but there are also process audits that can be done. And all of this is by way of sort of continuous process improvement for your elections. So there are many pieces to the puzzle. It's not just about checking the vote tabulation, making sure it was correct. It's about making sure your chain of custody of your election materials is good and about making sure that the systems are working the way they're supposed to. Many other pieces that can be, that you get that benefit from the process of doing an audit. And yes, if you're also doing robust pre-election testing, there'll be things that you'll find in that process too. And this is just another way of making sure that you're checking the systems and that they're working right. So we strongly applaud all of you for doing them. Other states will, how many things to audit, how much to audit, all goes to the question of cost and burden and resources. And so we're very interested to know from you about things like how that burden can be alleviated. Someone said to me yesterday, we have this mandatory recount law. How does that mesh with doing the audits? And I think that that's a really good point and that there shouldn't be duplicative burden. But that they can serve different purposes and complementary purposes. So there may be a way that we can sort out, how best to do it in a way that's not overly burdensome because you also have that, which some other states don't have. My state audits every single contest on the ballot, but only 1%. And they've been doing this for about 40 years or so. you know, is that the best way to audit? Probably not, using something like some statistical methods to find how much to audit or how little to audit in any given contest is better. Do you have to do every single contest? Surely not. Probably you want to do what you consider to be your most important contest, maybe your statewide contest, and you know, some other randomly selected contest that's local, so you know that the dog catcher electee is actually the right person who got elected to be dog catcher, or whatever is a local contest that's of importance to you. And you know how to select those, how much to do, what percentage to do, if it's a flat percentage or not a flat percentage. Those are all things that are in a great deal of discussion, and so it's about what works best for Ohio, but also about what is most effective and most efficient. So I'm really interested to hear your thoughts about costs and resources. Thanks.
Catherine? After the popularity of post-election audits spreading through other states across the nation, including neighboring states, Pennsylvania and West Virginia, our office decided to implement a post-election audit, and we had a pilot program in the March primary of last year that included 11 counties. There's three different types of audits that are used nationwide. There's a tiered, statistical, and then a fixed percentage. And we had decided on fixed percentage to make it easier on boards because that was very close to the recount procedures that we currently use. So it wouldn't be a new process of determining how many votes would be counted or how many precincts would need to be drawn. It was something that everyone was already a little bit familiar with. We did the pilot program basically so we could learn how this would fit for Ohio. We had 11 boards that went in size from you know, Franklin, very large county, down to very small rural counties, so we could get feedback from them to make sure that when we implemented this in the November's election, that we had better policies, better procedures, and better tools for the counties. It did come out a little bit late, but it was something after the pilot program was discussed. It was discussed at length during summer conference of last year that this was going to be one of the things that would be coming out for November's election. So the boards could at least prepare for the fact that we were going to have some type of audit going on after the November election. Some counties, when they did their audits for November, they did find some things that missing absentee ballots that weren't counted, some totals that didn't fix up or match up correctly to the official canvas, and they were able to change those or you know, able to at least look at why these problems happened. So it did help us in November's election in finding the little problems that did occur. But looking at it, we also, Cuyahoga had a problem and figuring out that while, you know, the smaller counties, they might only have one precinct to do an audit on, Cuyahoga had many precincts. So they had statistically a greater chance of finding very large errors that would possibly result in having to do a countywide recount of every single vote. So I think from that we learned that we might have to look for a different way to do audits that would be fair for the larger counties and fair for the more rural counties. So I think we did learn a lot from November's election and also the pilot program that we had in March in trying to find audits that would fit better for Ohio. So.
Thanks. I would echo, I'll just echo some things that some folks said and maybe add a couple of things. I think the principles document that is on the tables is a good document to look at. At the Brennan Center, we worked with the Samuelson Clinic at UC Berkeley to put together a document, which you can find at the Brennan Center online. That kind of details what other states are doing. At this point, it may be a little bit dated. I think we put it out last year, and so much has been happening in this area. But it provides kind of some context for what's going on in post-election audits around the country. I think the fact that Ohio decided to do to pilot this is in and of itself a great step, and it was something that I encourage the Secretary of State's office to do. I think it was an opportunity, because this is something that you have to learn by doing, and because we're having so many states move in this direction, I think it's very helpful to try it out a couple of times before putting anything concrete into law. And it sounds like, I mean, certainly from what Catherine said and from what I read in the media, the audit did what it was supposed to do. It's not, some of the reasons that we do audits are things like deterring fraud and catching incorrect results in races. I think that's the motivation of a lot of people behind wanting audits. But the audits serve another very valuable purpose, and that is an opportunity to review how the election went, where there may have been minor things like, I don't want to say if this is minor in the sense that you don't want to lose any ballots, but the fact that some ballots went, there were a couple of ballots that went missing here or there, or that votes were dropped, that's something you want to know when it's just a small occurrence, because it allows you to change your procedures a little bit to make sure that something doesn't happen again, particularly in a close election. I think of what happened in Palm Beach County in a primary this year, where they had a very close race for a judge that was decided by something like 87 votes. And, you know, there were just some, in that case, the fact that they had some ballots that went missing was a huge deal. It's better to catch those kinds of things when it's not a huge deal and refine your processes so that when you do have a very close race like that, you're not under the media spotlight for that kind of a problem, and have litigation that goes on for years afterwards. In terms of what could be improved, I would echo what Ron said. I think that my biggest criticism, if I have one, of the pilot this time was that the procedures for election officials came out 10 days after the election. And certainly it's helpful for election officials to know that there's going to be an audit ahead of time. I think it's even more helpful to know exactly what that audit is going to look like, because it allows election officials to prepare beforehand and makes the whole process of auditing a lot easier afterwards. And I think that was particularly the case with absentee ballots this time around. If election officials knew exactly what they were going to have to do with absentee ballots before the election, before they started counting the ballots, it probably would have been a lot easier, and they probably would have saved a lot of money and time in counting those ballots. I think, though, in general, what I'm curious to hear from Catherine and from other election officials is what they think they've learned from these pilots, because it seems to me that was their very purpose, was to figure out what works, what doesn't, and to refine the process for the future.
The second part of the session is easing administration. What changes to the post-election audit process would ease?
Sorry, do you mind if we could see if there's some election officials who want to?
Absolutely.
First
does session? Anyone have any comments or questions regarding the first question?
What went well? What didn't go well? Any?
What could be improved?
Cheryl Browning from Jackson. Board of Elections Director. As I said this morning when we were talking about this a little bit in open session, I think that if we had, since you guys now have a template sort of in place for what you want from us, if we got those directions before the election started so that we could track them as we went along instead of having to go back and think, you know, oh, how many of these did we have and how many of these did we have? It would make it a whole lot easier on our end. I think that for our county, it made us think a little bit more about where we were putting what, you know, because we keep different things sorted in different places in our vault, and so it made it so we had to keep better track of where each individual thing was at.
Hi there, I'm Tom from Huron County. As a deputy director, it would have been much easier for us to do if, I know it's going to be repetitive, if we would have known ahead of time. The problem that we had is when we're a touchscreen county, and the touchscreens with the recount, audit, I guess choose your word, it went very well. The problem we had was our optical scan ballots. That after the more they get run through, the more they get folded, the more they get unfolded, the more problems we have. So that was a very time-consuming process for us, is to rescan. You wouldn't think that rescanning the ballots would be a big issue, but because of the length of the ballot, we had three ballots. We had three 14-inch ballots. So that was a very time-consuming process to do that. The problem with the optical scan just drove us nuts. If we would have known ahead of time, we would have made sure that we kept the absentee separate than the election day ballots, because what happens is when we've got several people that are not doing this on an everyday basis, they just merged everything into the boxes. Once they scanned them, they put everything into those boxes. Well, though the absentee should be separate from the election day, because we kept the provisional afterward, that wasn't an issue. But so that was a real problem. And I guess we were, I'll speak for myself, I was a little hesitant about the process. I don't think it was a bad process. I think we learned some things. But I guess what I'm wondering is, how many times do we have to have good elections to prove that we got good elections and the machines work? That's what I'm wondering is, what road are we going down? Are we gonna have to be doing this with every election? Because quite honestly, we ran out of money at the end of last year. It was very nice that we had four or five of our part-time people that had helped us throughout the year that said, I'll come back and help you for a couple days. That was the only reason we were able to get this done in time. I guess I'd be real interested in the thought, maybe from the Secretary of State's office and from others, is this something we're gonna be dealing with every year? What happens when we prove that this is our, we did the audit and we've had three recounts before that, and the paper ballot is always the problem for us, because people will circle or they'll X through the optical scan ballot, and when we do the hand count, we realize that the part-time people that come in and help us, when they scan those ballots through, it says overvote, or so they just press the buttons and go through. They're not paying that close attention to realize, wait a minute, there's an X, we need to do that. We need to set that aside and we need to remake that. I know there was issues with double bubbles and, but what we've had consistently with all of our recounts is that our TSX units are right on. It's when the voters don't follow the instructions and the part-time people aren't paying that close attention as they're scanning it through. After 10, 12 hours, they just go on autopilot. So that was the problems that we had. And as Forrest said, that's all I got to say about that.
I guess in some part, that's what the audit's for. It's to catch things like that, because even if they X or circle, it's still a vote. As obviously voter intent was to vote for that candidate. So in a way, that's what the audit's for, to try to pick up those mistakes. Because it does happen, especially on election night. You're running through election day ballots. You've been at the board office then for 24 hours, and you've gone through probably 5 gallons of coffee by that point. You get tired, and I can completely understand that.
I guess
I would just add that what we did with March, March of last year, when we weren't doing the audit, that's when we realized that people are putting X's through there or they're circling them. What we did for November, which helped us greatly, is that if it wasn't a double, if it wasn't a bubble, and we had people in November scanning them, and they had three times the number of ballots that they normally would have because of the three-page ballot, what we did is we had them pull every ballot that they could see that didn't clearly have the bubbles that had X's or circles. So I'm sure, even though we didn't learn it at the audit, we learned it in March. Mm-hmm. We told all these parts and people, if it's circled, if it's an X, pull it out. So we did learn things, and hopefully that will make sure, as we go forward, that will make sure that we can get those things remade and we'll get more accurate counts.
And I know with absentee ballots, I mean, boards see everything. People use them as coasters before they mail them back. They write phone messages, everything, so.
Hi, Mike DeFranco from Cuyahoga County. We have Red Bull dispensers on each floor at our place. The coffee doesn't do it.
I completely understand. That's what my assistant got me as my Christmas gift this year, was a case of it, so.
We found a lot of good things with the audit also that we need to segregate our ballots. And what we're doing right now is we're ordering shelving for each precinct in the county. And when the absentees are scanned, they're gonna go in a certain color envelope so we know which ones are absentees, which ones are provisionals, which ones are remakes. So that's gonna be a big help for us. But what you mentioned before about lowering the percentage for the larger counties would probably be a big help.
How many precincts did you have to count for the audit?
53 for the first round.
No, it was over 100. It was like 109 or something.
It was disgusting, to say the least.
I was going to talk about that a little. On the question about, you know, when are we done with audits? We've proved the machines. I guess from my point of view, we're not checking the machines each time. The reason I got interested in audits and put, you know, my time into this is that I kind of look at audits as if I got a credit card bill and it just said you owe $1,000, but it didn't tell you what the charges were, I'd have no way of checking that bill was correct. And over the years, I've had a couple, you know, mistakes on my credit card. So when we have an election, since we have a secret ballot, when the election management system comes out with a number, it may be correct. You know, it could be wrong. And to me, the audit is sort of like the detail on the credit card bill. It lets me look and see if, to the best an audit can do, that something, you know, went wrong or didn't go wrong, even if it doesn't make a difference in the in any race or contest, it helps us learn from that. And I guess as an example, I go back to a limited audit that I see Candace is here and Adele, though I'm not sure Adele was involved, but in Cuyahoga we did a partial audit of the, in this case, some of the DRE reports, but also the absentee ballots, and we compared them against the unofficial canvas. So this was not affecting the official results. But I think we found two or three precincts that it looked pretty, that had twice as many counts, almost exactly twice as many votes on the state, on the SOVC, the Statement of Votes Cast report, as we found absentee ballots. So it seems they had been scanned twice, and I think three or four precincts with no ballot counts, vote counts at all on the Statement of Votes Cast, but they did have absentee ballots in the folders. And that probably or possibly got corrected for the official count. But election night, I've been a poll worker for the last few years. I haven't been there on election night, but I've heard that it's can be pretty hectic, especially in large counties with batches of absentee ballots being brought up. And it's feasible and possible for something to get counted twice or not counted at all. So it's one way to catch those kind of things because, you know, mistakes are possible. And as Larry mentioned, having an audit there at the end also is provides some deterrence to somebody who wants to get in and do some mischief. So, you know, to answer the gentleman or Tom's point about ongoing thing, I think these should be a regular part of the process. You know, what level we audit, how, you know, is an open question, but I think it should be a regular part of the process.
Ned Foley from Ohio State. If I can just ditto that last point, I think, and as you said it, I mean, there's legitimate questions about scope of audit, cost of audit, but I think conceptually, it's not a one-shot, oh, once we've proven that the machines work, we never have to do another audit again for future elections. And the way I think of it is to think about it in relationship to what's often called reconciliation. I mean, you know, after as part of the counting process of ballots, you look at the and see how many voters voted at this precinct and compare that to how many votes were cast at the precinct. And sometimes it's off by one or two here or there. That's normal, you know, I mean, but you make a look at that. Now, that's not technically an audit in the sense that some of these audits are used, but it's a review of the voting process. And it seems to me that that's the right mindset for thinking about this. There are certain steps and procedures that you have to take to go from unofficial, you know, initial canvas to official certified result to make sure that there's an adequate sense of the accuracy of the result. And with that mindset, then you can design how you want to do it. But I think it has to be budgeted as an ongoing, every election needs an appropriate level of post-counting review, including reconciliation and some audit function, and that's the mindset. So I would just want to echo that point. Thank you.
Well, you sold me.
Well, thanks for saying that, Ned. I would like to say that one way to think about it also is that you've proved that the equipment worked right this time. And so that's why you do it next time as well. Thanks.
Peggy Byers, Washington County. Good idea probably that we do audits, but again, it's so important that you communicate with us that we're going to have to do it because we did things like hire extra poll workers and we put greeters in some of our model precinct locations. And if I'd have known that before that we were definitely going to be demanded, I would have spent the money differently.
Thank you. Also, I want to add really quick. As he said, that every election should have an audit, and I'm not sure right now that we're looking for special elections having audits. So our February and August, basically because A, the entities that bring the issue, levy, question, or whatever pay for those. So that might deter someone. And also, if there is something wrong and they would like an audit, they have requested recounts that they can request and they'd end up paying for it anyway. So there is a mechanism there if they sense that there is a problem. So. Candace?
Thank you. I wanted to endorse what Ned and Ron were saying as well about the importance of ongoing audits and also what Peggy was saying. The audit directive came out way too late, and it was also far more cumbersome than was necessary. But also, one of the things we know from studying the voting technology and doing it in Cuyahoga County with our premier equipment is a lot of this technology hasn't been designed for easy auditability. And so that really is the next step, to bring down the cost and make it very easy and fast. And that's part of the trouble with where we are right now with auditing, is that it is extremely difficult. It needs to be structured, designed, so that it's very quick and very cost effective. So that's one of our goals. I would encourage us all to demand of the certification system in Washington or in any state that we insist that the vendors and the regulatory system require this as a part of how their systems are designed, because it's our budgets, it's our taxpayers, and it's our ability to show the public that we're honest. Those of us who are involved in elections, we're honest, we're doing the public's business at a high level of proficiency, honesty, integrity. That's what an audit does for us, and if there is a problem, we get to correct it. So, thank you.
Since we seem to be getting into the second part of our last questions, I'm going to combine the last two questions. Easing administration. What changes to the post-election audit process would ease the administrative processes for audits, as well as the cost of implementation? continuing audits in Ohio. As we continue to look at the use of post-election audits, when should counties audit results? Mr. Olson, you alluded earlier that you would be interested in hearing what the boards had to say about the cost and implementation of the audits. Is there anything else that you would like to add to that? Or for the third question?
Well, I think it was Catherine referred to, you know, there are a lot of elections, and we tend to follow, at least I do, the primary and the general election, and then there was something in February and more in May, and I lose track of all these. I certainly think there's a decision to be made on how, you know, when you audit. I certainly don't think all of those need to be audited, but that needs to be discussed. As far as easing administration, I know there were some comments sent back to the Secretary of State from various counties, but my understanding is that there was a lot of different types of information, and it would be great to get comments, as we've gotten a few here, from boards on how it went, what could be better for next time, because I think certainly we learned things in March at those 11 or 12 counties. I'm sure we learned a lot more in November. I know, you know, Mike was saying about Cuyahoga, they're going to store the absentee ballots differently, and I was there for a few hours. I know Adele spent a lot more time than I did, but it seemed like the first couple days was mainly spent trying to find all the absentee ballots for these different types, the remakes and provisionals, and make sure you had all the ballots before you got started on the hand count. So certainly there's a lesson learned there, and you know, a number of us were, you know, encouraging the Secretary of State to come out with this sooner. I'm sure they were very busy with an election coming out, and that's why it, you know, didn't come out until after the election. I'm sure they would have had it out sooner if they had the time. Yeah, but certainly we shouldn't have that problem next time. But if there's a process for getting those suggestions, you know, maybe not right here, but over time back to Secretary of State's office, and, you know, I'd certainly be interested in seeing what those are as well. And from those, I think we can look at how the administrative costs can be reduced, because hopefully Cuyahoga won't have, I know when I was there the second day, I think there were 25 teams of two counters each pretty much waiting for ballots. So they weren't, you know, there was a lot of cost being wasted there, and hopefully that won't happen next time. But I'd also like to see if we can regularly gather cost data, because I don't know if any has been gathered. A couple of us have been working on trying to ask some boards of elections for their estimate on what cost, you know, this current audit took. But next time, you know, it would be even more important to get that data, because the second time is bound to be better.
And also preparing for the audits. I mean, I know that some boards, the ballots go to one place. You tabulate in your office, or some I know, like Franklin, for instance, tabulates down at their warehouse. So when the audit calls for you drawing names of the precincts out of a, you know, glass bowl, and then trying to get all the materials together, there could be a day trying to prepare to get all of those materials that the audit asks for together in one spot to begin the audit, too. So definitely getting the audit directive, or just the procedures for it, out earlier, so you can prepare as you're going through all the procedures setting up for the election and everything, to make sure that you have it all together, so afterward it's easier for you.
I would just add also there may be some ways that existing laws could be looked at in terms of, like, for example, how much time you have to get the audit completed. And California, for example, has a 28-day window, which is really long compared to some other states. And, you know, it sometimes, you know, adding just a few days to your window may make a big difference, but that may be something that's a statutory change. So if something like that is helpful, you know, maybe that's a way to help help with that process.
Just briefly, has anyone found a cell phone at any of the tables?
What's its number? We can call it.
It's true.
That's a good idea. That's how I find my phone. Somebody call me.
No? No cell phone? No one sounded? Please? They did not give me a phone number. Okay. Nothing else. Do we have any questions or comments then?
Stuart, beat you there.
I'm Stuart Wright, a voter in Franklin County. And I think Ron and some of the others may have something to say about decreasing the cost of an audit by having a statistical procedure other than a fixed percentage or a tiered.
I think that after, as I said in the opening, after looking at how Cuyahoga had to count, you know, over 100 precincts, and then, you know, maybe a smaller rural county might have had one or two precincts to count, I think that's something that we will definitely be looking at, especially because of the error. You only got two votes to be off. So Cuyahoga had, you know, thousands upon thousands of votes that they could only be two off, and there's maybe a small rural county that, you know, they had 100 votes, and if they were two off. So I think statistically it would make more sense that we might be looking into a different form.
He was referring to precinct selection. You're talking about triggers to a larger level of audit. You guys are talking about...
No, I meant if we did the statistical, like the fixed percentage.
Right. Right. I understand. But I think that Stuart meant something different about having to select fewer precincts.
Well, I thought Ron might have some figures.
It's being examined. I think that's a good point. If you can reduce the burden because you don't necessarily need to count as many audit units, or select as many audit units to count because of considerations such as margin and how many votes, then that is going to be a great way to save costs for most elections. If you have a very close one, probably your automatic recount rule is kicked in already anyway. So that would apply there. I think with respect to the how many off before we escalate to another level is a good question. It's important to note, is there a distinction between an explainable discrepancy, for example, you know, your scanner didn't pick up a mark because it was faint or something along those lines, or picked up an extra mark because it was too dark, a smudge was dark or something like that. An explainable discrepancy versus one that, you know, honestly, we've looked at it, we just don't know why it's off. That, it seems to me, doing an expanded audit makes complete sense. You really want to do that because you want to know if there's a way to find out what the problem was. If it's an explainable discrepancy, and maybe this is something that a task force of folks like you, election officials, advocates, and the secretary's office could look at, you know, maybe a sort of a standards working group for post-election audits would be a great thing to implement, where you get input from everybody, and then you can come up with some good ways to address those kinds of things before you go to a full-blown, heavily burdensome count for something that really was, you know, explainable.
I'll probably repeat some of what Catherine and Pam have mentioned, but you know, there are sort of two parts to this. One is how many ballots or precincts do you count initially, and then what is your tolerance level for moving to do more audits because something was off and there's some concern here. And we have a group of us have provided some recommendations on doing what this best principles document calls a risk limiting audit, where the, as Pam was saying, the margin of victory, apparent margin of victory in the first, in the unofficial canvas, I guess, or is it the official, in the official canvas, is used to determine how many votes. And so I think roughly speaking, we would have audited for the presidential race in 2008 far less than 5%. So. But if it had been a 2000 race in Florida, you would have been auditing, you know, perhaps all the ballots. But in general, a risk limiting audit is going to count more votes than a fixed percentage audit in a close race, and fewer votes when a race is, you know, even 2 or 3% margin of victory, which most races are. But then you have to get into what is the triggering mechanism to do more. And, you know, some states do the fixed percentage, or in this case, the Ohio's chosen to do a 5% and a 3% sort of tiered approach. You know, in my opinion, you know, an audit is a good thing to have. I'd rather have a tiered one than nothing. But it might be worth discussing the additional advantages with some complexity implications of a risk limiting or statistical audit.
I'm sorry, Karen, you've been waiting a while, so I'll let you go ahead and ask.
That's all right. I'm Karen Cotton. I'm with Franklin County Board of Elections. I'm manager of election operations, and I'm now in my 29th year at the Board of Elections. And let me tell you that even Red Bull or Monster, neither one help when you're on your 39th hour of continuous work. When I got home that night, I actually began to question myself about how realistic I had been to drive home on my own. So, we had in Franklin County our own audit. We did not participate in the Secretary of State's audit in the March election of 2008. We actually went out and hired Larry Norton and Pam Smith and Candace Hook to help us with our audit. They did receive information from the Secretary of State's office and worked with them in trying to develop a plan. And we audited it actually because that was the first election we had used the multiple precinct location, and we were drawing our selected precincts on a precinct basis. We actually audited a lot larger number of votes than we would have if we had been taking into account that we had the MPL's SPL configuration. So out of 33,000 votes, we had 8 of the Ivotronic votes that we couldn't actually tell what they were from the tape because of a paper jam or some other problem, which is pretty good. But what we do between our unofficial and our official, we compare the documents that our precinct election officials had completed for us and actually add up the public count from those individual precincts. And then between the time of the unofficial and the official, we're comparing all of those, you know, why is there this discrepancy of 20 votes here or 80 votes here? Because everything election night is unofficial.
Yes, so you caught something in November, right?
Pardon?
There was a problem in November's election or something.
Yes, because we did have someone read a PEB twice, and we were getting the data on election night from PEBs, and then the next thing we do is we download all the memory cards. But there's all of those comparison things that go through this whole process. I don't object to audits. We've handled audits well. Other than our paper this last election, I mean, we're talking over 200,000 persons voting an optical scan ballot, and most of your ballots are 4-page ballots. Very difficult to find page 1 of 200,000 sheets of paper when you've got to go through shelves that are 10 feet high just to get to them. So that's a monumental amount, the way that the things were chosen. But on the other hand, as we go into this election, where you've got every municipality in the county that has their own elections on and every school board, and you have some countywide issues, if we're going to continue to audit, which I have no objection to, we need clear guidance ahead of time, is what race do we audit?
Mm-hmm.
Is it the countywide race? Although the township trustees race that is divided by 5 is going to say my race is more important. So we need to have that guidance well in advance so we know how to plan for those things.
Okay. And thank you for that suggestion. I'll make sure that gets back to the office.
I'm Joanne Karasik, and I served as an observer for the November election, and I've observed a number of audits in the last few years. I wanted to comment that this fall I was observing Hamilton County, and Sherry, who happens to be sitting right next to me, ran the draw, and it was a letter-perfect draw, which was really a beautiful thing to see. So I also wanted to comment that I have picked up information like Pam mentioned that doing a recount and then doing an audit, and do you have to redo the recount? Well, Hamilton County called the Secretary of State and asked if they had to, if they could include the recount in the audit without redoing it, and the Secretary of State said yes. So sometimes people that have been frustrated doing the audit this November, if they picked up the phone and asked the Secretary of State, they might have been very happy with the answer, as Cuyahoga County was when they had the problem with so many ballots and facing a possible complete recount or complete count. And also in Hamilton County, there was an error in the original entry, and they caught it just before the audit, and the Secretary of State didn't say you have to include that in the audit and you have to do a second audit and all that jazz. She said it's fine to do an amendment. And so I wanted to comment. They called the Secretary of State. If you're squeezed and you think that you have a reason why you should get a little change. And my only problem in the audit situation that I have seen through the years is how the materials that are going to be audited, specifically the ballots, are kept. If you don't make them very secure with sealed boxes, sealed rooms, and so forth, you're comparing against something that might have been changed. Hopefully it wasn't accidentally changed, and certainly hopefully it wasn't deliberately changed, but you can't know that, and you can't have confidence in the results of the audit unless you secure the ballots and all the other things that will be counted in the audit. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, thank you. I just add that certainly your point about securing ballots is crucial, because if you don't know what you're counting, then there's no point.
Any other comments?
Hi, I'm Walter Mevin. I'm a political scientist and a statistician from University of Michigan. I was involved in endorsing the early proposal for the tiered audits that apparently was used to inform this process. And I've also involved in, mainly by reviewing some papers, the development of the more elaborate and accurate and less expensive statistical audits that Mr. Olson, I assume, was alluding to, developed by a statistician named Philip Stark. And I would just want to endorse your apparent sympathy in favor of those methods, which are at a relatively high level of development now. They would greatly improve the cost, efficiency, and effectiveness of both selecting the initial sample of precincts, determining the precinct sizes, and also allow one to build in a variety of escalation procedures which could be sensitive to various policy preferences. It would not in itself help with the selection of which offices to audit. That would be a separate decision, of course, that would be informed by complicated circumstances, but that could put things on a scientific basis. One of the key aspects of the kind of methodology that I'm alluding to that Philip Stark has developed is transparency in a variety of ways. You won't believe that if you try to read the papers yourself, but the method itself involves publicly selecting random numbers and randomly picking precincts in a public way so no one is suspicious that the audit has been cooked, and also public ability to select the escalation procedure and so on. So I think that that work is not definitive. It's not the last development that will happen. It's not the only possible alternative that would endorse, that would develop some of these principles. There's this whole method is well on the way to having a firm, explicit, peer-reviewed scientific foundations.
Thanks for the comment. We did talk with Philip a little bit. Mainly we happened to work with a couple other statisticians on our original risk-limiting audit. I know they're in touch with Philip, and I knew they knew about his methods. I think the issue that Ohio may have to struggle with is this question of whether we do a statistical or risk-limiting audit, or whether we stay with the 5 and the 3%. You know, there are cost issues, there are some complexity issues, but I think it's an important discussion to have, especially when we get into the cost issue that, as Larry pointed out, is becoming a theme of the of this conference, because there are savings, you know, at the cost of some complexity.
I want to add, thank you, Dr. Mabane. Nice to meet you finally. I've seen your name many times. And I wanted to add that verified voting has a resource that you might be interested in participating in, where folks like statisticians who are interested in this issue kind of go back and forth on some of these topics, and you can ask questions, and it's a listserv, an auditing listserv, and if you're interested in being part of that, you know, let me know, and we'll get your email added to it. And one other resource that's available to you, if you're curious about what some other states are doing on this subject, if you go to verifiedvoting.org/audits, there's a document there that we update pretty regularly, which contains links to all the audit provisions that are in statute or rules in other states. And as new ones get added, we plug them in there, and so you'll be able to see and track what those provisions look like if you're interested. And again, I strongly encourage that Ohioans study this issue internally and look at what some of the benefits are to doing different kinds of audits in a kind of a working group format.
I also appreciate Philip Stark's work on audits. Two thoughts here. One is that if we're going to have risk-limited audits, we need to have some kind of coordinating policy board that is going to help make decisions similar to what we did in Cuyahoga for our very first audit, where we brought together representatives of the Republican, Democratic, and nonpartisan communities as a policymaking board, because there are all sorts of issues that come up that are unanticipated that have to be resolved. And Ron was a part of that board, for instance. It functioned very well. That's one possible change that could help, and it would also take the audit process out of, and supervision possibly out of, the Secretary of State's office. The other point is, I would actually like to ask a question about choosing races. Part of the reason for auditing is to, as Larry was saying, to deter any kind of mischief. And if we announce in advance, or if people know what races are going to be audited in advance, that knowledge can undermine the ability to achieve the deterrent effect. We may think and hope that there won't be mischief in our elections, but auditing, this is one core goal. So one recommendation that I made for the auditing directive that didn't appear this time, and I can understand it was our very first time, was to put every race on the ballot in jeopardy sense of being audited, and just put them in a hat and pull out however many races, so that there is not a single race that is not subject to being audited. And that way, you don't know in advance, but you know very rapidly after the unofficial results have been posted, or the official if you do it at that point. But I would like the panel, if you don't mind, to comment on whether you think putting all races in major elections, we won't go to the special election issue, in jeopardy is important or not, and comment.
I think it's important, Candace. I think the question is, and I mean, Karen raised this point, there has to be a balance between what your goals are for the audit and what's administratively feasible. And I guess somebody has to balance those two things. It's not going to be me. So that's my my non-answer to the question.
Go ahead. I too think that's a good policy to kind of leave it open that an evildoer wouldn't know ahead of time what contests are subject to the audit. But I think that what a lot of states do is, because a lot of people consider top-of-ticket contests to be real important, they already plan to do top-of-ticket, say president in a presidential year, governor in a non-presidential year, the federal contest maybe. A good example to look at might be Missouri has a provision that takes in some top-of-ticket races, and then they have a way to choose from among some other contests that will be included. And it's, you know, it may not be optimal. Maybe it's more contests than you want to look at, but it's an example that you could look at that would be a way of selecting from sort of down ticket categories and picking one from those.
Some urban counties might have some difficulty if it's not countywide, because obviously that would kind of limit the number of precincts that would be able to be audited. If, like, for instance, they draw a state house race where it's, you know, a small portion of the county, that would be my only comment on that. We just have to look on how you match, if it's not countywide, how you would match what precincts and percentage of that race particularly would be counted.
Hi, I'm Adele Eisner, a citizen voter, member of the VRIAC, and I'm in Cuyahoga County. And I did spend, I spent 8 days at the board, part of them, the last few. That's just with the audit. I also have been an observer for every major election, primary and general, since November 2005. So, a few comments. Number one, we're all talking about audits here, and I think I want to say that despite the lateness of the directive, which I think threw a loop, cost effectiveness, which we heard, could have allocated resources differently, the lateness and it, which made it really tough for the boards to know even how to keep their papers. They didn't know what was going to be expected. I really appreciated the audit directive, mainly because it did require certain documents. It required ballot reconciliation. The absolute two, and I heard someone else mentioned the reconciliation of poll books to ballots per precinct. It required poll book justification with the number of ballots that were cast. And it required the other major basic foundational auditing procedure, which is counting ballots. How many were used, voted, i.e., how many were spoiled? How many were ordered from the printer? How many are left over, unused? Do they add up? I want to say that I am very proud to be part of the Cuyahoga group, because Cuyahoga County did every single document that was required, and it took some negotiation and some discussion about what would be proof to the average Joe that everything, the whole process was really completed and looked at and reflected upon. And they did it. Cuyahoga County also learned a lot. Their document that showed why their vote count, their hand count, did not match the official count was very reflective, I think more reflective than the activists and the observers. They actually self-reflected and said, what did we do wrong, or what can we do better? And with an opening toward not being the experts, and we are the experts and we're here in judgment, which is something I really don't like about observation among some observers. But they are saying, look, we're in this together and we just want to get better. And I say, God bless you. What else can we expect from a group of people under such pressure than to say, we're looking at it, we have a problem, we've identified the problem, and we're going to try to solve it next time. So I think that all this talk about audits, and I've heard, you know, that we should advocate that the vendors, I do believe the vendors, the machine vendors, need to make their products more easily auditable. And we heard that about VVPATs and paper trails, and we all know that paper trails can be like fool's gold in the end. You know, we just go from where our attention gets strewn from one thing to another. I think we really need to talk about what is an audit. we're mixing apples and oranges here. We're talking about, we really need to know, we need process audits. Probably just as importantly as we need results. In other words, numbers audits. Do these match up to what was announced? The process audits, as the processes get improved over a few years, can probably back down. But I know that Cuyahoga is already doing ballot reconciliations for every election now, just because of the audit experience. We need to know what did we learn more at this juncture. Start where we are now at the beginning. And we need to say what went wrong, what did we learn? Not did we get within two votes, so we have to sit here and hand count everything.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We have time for just one more question, and then we'll have our panel make any final comments. Just as a reminder, before everyone leaves, please take your badges and put them in the recycle box right outside at the registration desk. And could anyone tell me where the sign-up sheet was at, the sign-in sheet? Would you please give this to the lady over here in the red jacket? Thank you. Go ahead, sir.
Bill Buckle, Columbus, Ohio. And my, as a result of standing in line and listening, I learned that maybe my question isn't particularly useful, but I thought that all elections on the ballot, all offices on the ballot, were audited at the same time it was used. Obviously, it's not. You just pick one or two offices from a particular tape to audit. Are those, and this is the reason for my staying in line, are those tapes or those printed strips created in such a fashion that you can read them with optical scanners so that you can just run a tape through pretty fast to make an audit?
I'm sorry, are you talking about the VPATs from the DRE touchscreen machines? No, those have to be all read by hand.
In other words, then you could change the requirements to the vendors to make tapes that are readable with optical scanners in order to speed up that process and then get cost down. That's a possibility. Okay.
What you're describing as something called a machine-assisted audit, which is something that is being considered in some jurisdictions, I think what Ohio so far has moved towards is doing a manual or what's sometimes called a hand-to-eye count of those records. You know, it's not to say that there isn't a way to do machine-assisted audits in some combination with manual hand-to-eye counts. I think it's important to always do some, and I'm a strong proponent of manual hand-to-eye counts because my sense is you've got another machine that you bring into the process, then you've got to check it, so you start getting into more auditing.
That could save time.
And yeah. I wanted to just follow up on a couple of points that were made and thank everybody for their really valuable input. Yes to more process considerations in auditing, especially Adele. On the vendors and the reporting, there's a way that the data that gets reported can be made more audit friendly. And we've actually talked to some of the vendors about that and about formats for that data, so you're not having to take something that's, you know, a PDF or something like that, you know, to be able to convert into more auditable data. These are a little bit random. I want to throw out a plug for the high degree of professionalism and organization at Franklin County when we were there helping with that primary. I've never met anyone like Karen Cotton, and she did an extraordinary job. And yes, they have a great facility there at the warehouse with lots of room, which brought up a thought in my mind about some of the smaller counties in my state of California. We have big ones and small ones, too. And that the smaller counties, one of the burdens for them resource-wise on their audits is just not having enough space. You know, they don't have a warehouse. And one person in Monterey County told me her office, her elections office, is in a strip mall. And it was great when the strip mall had a vacant store next to their office because they were allowed to use it when they did their audits. And then they rented it to somebody, and that was a real snag for her. That's a resource issue that I think bears thinking about when you're looking at how much to audit and so on and how much time you have to get it done. there was a question about some of the paper ballots, the absentees, and maybe the in polling place paper ballots, and doing rescans of them could cause some degradation of the quality. Yeah, I think it was you that mentioned, and somebody else said that to me yesterday. And I think going to Ron's point earlier, if you're doing a count, if your initial account is what count is what you're using for the audit, you don't have to go back and do rescans and rescans. And that, I think, has a lot of value because you're preserving those ballots and being able to look at them, and you're not getting, you know, bits coming off of them and so on. That brings to mind my final point, which is if you're doing pre-sort of something like your absentee ballots, and I think Cuyahoga mentioned we're getting shelves, and if you have pre-sorts, then you can do a precinct type of audit really easily. If you're not doing a pre-sort, then it raises the question of whether you might do your scanned ballots in batches of roughly equivalent sizes and have a way to do batch audits. And if that turns out to be something that seems feasible and helpful, then that's something you need to know ahead of time, too. Because then when you're scanning them on your initial election night scan, you're doing them in those batch sizes already. And then you're going back and choosing the audit unit. It's not a precinct now, it's a batch. And that can really facilitate the process, especially if you're in a county that has more absentee votes, you know, more paper ballots. That can be a real facilitator of those kinds of that category of ballots. And again, thanks for the great feedback.
Mr. Olson.
Well, I'll add my thanks to everybody for coming. And I guess the one thing I would add is that I hope we can figure out a process to, you know, get more feedback from boards of elections in particular about how the audit went and what can be done better with future audits, maybe through the Secretary of State's office. I know we got some comments here, but there are many other counties that might not have been here, might not have had a chance to make comments, and of course we have some suggestions for improvement as well. So hopefully we can have that discussion in the near future. Thank you.
Ms. Thompson.
I'd also like to hear more feedback from boards or activists. And I mean, boards, you've been so resourceful when going from the recounts that we had after 06 for the audits and everything. I know one county that would take the VPAT, tape the end of it to a rolling pin, and have two people, one unwinding the VPAT and one with the rolling pin. There's another one that worked with the engineer's office to make a winder so they could, and it was just long enough so the whole ballot on the VPAT was readable. Just ideas to make the process better. So anyone who wants to contact me, you can contact me anytime with your ideas or thoughts on ways it would save your county, because as she said with room, I mean, I know some boards are a little bit bigger than a broom closet. Jim is in the back of the room. I know that your board in Jackson County is very small. So I understand that there's very different constraints for everyone, and also that when we look at things like audits, implementing them statewide, we need to look at the different diverse boards that we have across Ohio. So, and thank you again for all coming today.
Mr. Norton.
Well, I also thank everybody for coming and offering their thoughts. I guess I would echo the feedback comment that everybody else has made. In interviewing folks for the report, there were actually a number of election officials who suggested it would be helpful to have a law that clearly laid out when there were going to be audits and how often they were going to be and what the percentage was going to be that they were going to have to audit, because then they would just know ahead of time what the audit would be. And I'm certainly sympathetic in many ways to that idea. I do think that one particular piece of information that would be helpful is how much, and in some sense I think it might have been a little bit skewed this time because the counties got late notice of what the audit was, and so it was probably more costly. But I think getting an idea of how much these audits cost the counties would be particularly helpful If there does come a point where there's a law in Ohio for kind of balancing what might be the ideal audit and policy for audits, and what's realistic, particularly again, given that we are in Ohio and everywhere else at a point of slashing budgets.
Thank you for coming to this afternoon's work group session, post-election audits and recounts. Have a safe trip home.